one of the best chosen theme songs, I think. That's The Who. So, Lynn, this next story, it could be an episode of CSI. And you know what? I have no doubt
CSI.
It will become an episode of CSI.
Exactly.
I love the show, too. Scientists in Israel have demonstrated that DNA evidence can be faked. And we're not just talking about a stray hair or a thumbprint, but down at the molecular level. They say it was so easy that any competent biology undergraduate can do it. They were even able to fool an American forensic lab with their fake results.
Yeah, this is actually quite terrifying news.
I mean,
we can fool around about it, but this is scary stuff.
It really is. And joining us this morning to discuss it is Tim Bester, a professor of genetics at Columbia University, and Tanya Simoncelli, who is also with us. She's a science advisor to the American Civil Liberties Union. Tim, let's start with you and let's start with the science. How difficult is it to manipulate DNA in this way?
Not difficult at all. You could lyse or dissolve blood cells with, say, dishwashing detergent and common table salt, and then add a commercially available solution that contains an enzyme that replicates DNA, and the dNTPs, the precursors of DNA. So to make the DNA is from printed instructions on one page would not be difficult at all.
So you could do this just in your home kitchen?
Oh, yes.
Oh, goodness. So do you think a criminal ostensibly could take this fabricated DNA, plant it at a crime scene, and frame an innocent person?
It's conceivable, but most criminals are not that bright, really.
But you've just given them all the instructions.
Well, there's a way to distinguish synthetic DNA from natural DNA. Should I mention that?
Oh, please do.
So what we study in my lab is the ways that methylation patterns are established on DNA. So about 1% of the bases in the normal human genome are a modified base called 5-methylcytosine. And when you amplify DNA, you do not recreate those methylation patterns. But there is a way that you can either establish a random methylation pattern, or you can densely methylate specific regions, but there's no way to replicate the methylation pattern that normally exists in the human genome.
Interesting. Tanya, let me bring you into this. What are the implications for law enforcement with this, you know, new technique or discovery?
Well, first of all, I think this isn't a new technique or discovery. We've actually known for quite some time that DNA could be fabricated. There's a very similar study to this study that actually was done by a graduate student in Australia a few years back. So the notion that you could pick up a DNA sample from someone's coffee cup and amplify it using actually fairly readily available technologies and spread it around a crime scene, we've actually known that for some time. And, of course, there's also the possibility that the even easier way of framing someone for a crime, which is just to simply discard items like a coffee cup or a cigarette butt directly onto the crime scene. So this is a problem that we've been aware of actually for some time.
Interesting. Tanya Simoncelli of the ACLU, have we actually seen any instances of this happening?
Well, there have been a few very interesting cases that are very close to this. Of course, I would not be surprised if this has already happened. There was one very kind of well-known case about a guy who was in prison already for a rape conviction. And what he did was he tried to fool the police by smuggling out a semen sample in a ketchup container. And what he did is he actually paid a woman.
I don't even want to think about how it got there, but that's a separate issue.
It's actually quite amazing. He actually paid someone $50, a woman, to stage a phony rape. And so then when the DNA testing came back and she claimed she had been raped and it matched him and he was in prison, he tried to use that to say, see, I'm being framed for the crime that you actually put me in prison for. So the point is, criminals are getting smarter in terms of, and they will learn how to use DNA also.
So, you know, Tanya, I can imagine a defense attorney, you know, a clever one, in defending his client, doing a test like these scientists did, sending it off to a lab, and then saying, aha, it wasn't even real, it's, you know, presenting this to a jury. Could this really collapse the whole system of how we get evidence and convict people?
Well, I think that what we need to recognize is, I think this is a reality check. It's a reality check that says that DNA testing is not infallible, and we've known this. This is not the only way that DNA testing is infallible, by the way. Lots of ways. You can get mistakes in DNA testing. You can get samples that are switched. You can get contamination during the laboratory process where DNA samples get contaminated. You can get misinterpretation of results. The fabrication of DNA is just one more way that you can get an error in DNA testing, and we need to create a system that has the right checks and balances in it to make sure that to limit those errors as much as possible. And I think this is just another reality check that we need to put the right safeguards into the system to make sure we're not wrongfully convicting people and actually creating new rounds of innocence cases.
Timothy Bester, a genetics scientist and researcher at Columbia University. Let me ask the final question to you, though. Again, reality check. How realistic is it that we're going to be seeing this in the future?
It seems highly improbable, and DNA evidence is so much stronger than, for example, eyewitness testimony or fingerprints or other kinds of physical evidence. I mean, there's just so much information in the genome. You can always distinguish one individual from another. And as I said, you can always distinguish synthetic DNA from natural DNA by virtue of its methylation patterns. And in the case that was mentioned earlier, of course, that was natural DNA, not synthetic DNA. So the safeguards could be developed in a matter of weeks if somebody develops a simple method for amplifying someone else's DNA and distributing around a crime scene.
Well, thanks for joining us, Professor. That was Timothy Bester, Professor of Genetics and Development at the College of Physicians and Surgeons at Columbia University. We are also joined by Tanya Simoncelli of the ACLU.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.